are the magistracy, the gentry, the nobility of the land? Have they no concern for the honor of their nation? How long shall the capital city of Scotland, yea, the chief street of it, stink worse than a common sewer? Will no lover of his country or of decency and common sense find a remedy for this? Holyrood House at the entrance of Edinburgh, the ancient palace of the Scottish kings, is a noble structure. It was rebuilt and furnished by King Charles II. One side of it is a picture gallery wherein are pictures of all the Scottish kings, and an original one of the celebrated Queen Mary. It is scarcely possible for any who looks at this to think her such a monster as some have painted her, nor indeed for any who considers the circumstances of her death equal to that of an ancient martyr. A busy week. Monday, June 15. I rode to Durham, having appointed to preach there at noon. The meadow near the riverside was quite convenient, and the small rain near the disturbed me or the congregation. In the afternoon, I rode to Hartlepool, but I had much ado to preach. My strength was gone as well as my voice, and indeed, they generally go together. 3 days in a week, I can preach thrice a day without hurting myself, but I had now far exceeded this, besides meeting classes and exhorting the societies. I was obliged to lie down a good part of Tuesday. However, in the afternoon, I preached at Charrington, and in the evening at Hartlepool again, though not without difficulty. Wednesday the 17th, I rode to Stockton, where a little before the time of preaching, my voice and strength were restored at once. The next evening it began to rain just as I began to preach, but it was suspended till the service was over. It then rained again till 8 in the morning. Friday the 19th. It was hard work to ride 8 miles, so-called, in 2.5 hours, the rain beating upon us, and the by-road being exceedingly slippery. But we forgot all this when we came to the Grange, so greatly was God present with his people. Thence we rode to Darlington. Here we were under a difficulty again. Not half the people could come in, and the rain forbade my preaching without. But at 1, the hour of preaching, the rain stopped, and did not begin again till past 2. So the people stood very conveniently in the yard, and many did not care to go away. When I went in, they crowded to the door and windows and stayed till I took horse. At 7 I preached at Yarm, and desired one of our brethren to take my place in the morning. Wesleyan Impositions. Sunday the 21st, I rode to Osmotherley, where the minister read prayer seriously and preached a useful sermon. After service I began in the churchyard. I believe many were wounded and many comforted. After dinner I called on Mr. Adams, who first invited me to Osmotherley. He was reading the strange account of the two missionaries who have lately made such a figure in the newspapers. I suppose the whole account is just such another gross imposition upon the public as the man's gathering the people together to see him go into the quart bottle. Men 700 years old, and why not 7 yards high? He that can believe it, let him believe it. Monday the 22nd. I spoke one by one to the society at Hutton Rugby. At 11 I preached once more, though in great weakness of body, and met the stewards of all the societies. I then rode to Stokesley, and having examined the little society, went on for Gooseborough. The sun was burning hot, but in a quarter of an hour a cloud interposed, and he troubled us no more. I was desired by a gentleman of the town to preach in the marketplace, and there a table was placed for me, but it was in a bad neighborhood, for there was so vehement a stench of stinking fish as was ready to suffocate me, and the people roared like the waves of the sea. But the voice of the Lord was mightier, and in a few minutes the whole multitude was still and seriously attended while I proclaimed Jesus Christ, made of God unto us wisdom and righteousness and sanctification and redemption. 1 Corinthians 1:30. Tuesday the 23rd. I began about 5 near the same place and had a great part of the same audience, yet they were not the same. The change might easily be read in their countenance. When we took horse and just faced the sun, it was hard work for man and beast, but about 8 the wind shifted and blowing in our face kept us cool till we came to Whitby. In the evening I preached on the top of the hill, to which you ascend by 191 steps. The congregation was exceedingly large, and 99 in 100 were attentive. When I began, the sun shone full in my face, but he soon clouded and shone no more till I had done. Wednesday the 24th. I walked round the old abbey, which, both with regard to its size, being, I judge, 100 yards long, and the workmanship of it, is one of the finest, if not the finest, ruin in the kingdom. Hence we rode to Robin Hood's Bay, where I preached at 6 in the lower street near the quay. In the midst of the sermon, a large cat, frightened out of a chamber, leaped down upon a woman's head and ran over the heads or shoulders of many more, but none of them moved or cried out any more than if it had been a butterfly. Thursday the 25th, I had a pleasant ride to Scarborough, the wind tempering the heat of the sun. I had designed to preach abroad in the evening, but the thunder, lightning, and rain prevented it. However, I stood on a balcony, and several hundreds of people stood below, and notwithstanding the heavy rain, would not stir till I concluded. Friday, July 3rd, we returned to York, where I was desired to call upon a poor prisoner in the castle. I had formerly occasion to take notice of a hideous monster called a chancery bill. I now saw the fellow to it, called a declaration. The plain fact was this. Sometime since, a man who lived near Yarm assisted others in running some brandy. His share was nearly 4 pounds. After he had wholly left off that bad work and was following his own business, that of a weaver, he was arrested and sent to York jail. And not long after comes down a declaration that Jack W. had landed a vessel laden with brandy in Geneva at the port of London and sold them there, whereby he was indebted to His Majesty 577 pounds and upwards. And to tell this worthy story, the lawyer takes up 13 or 14 sheets of treble stamped paper. A monster called a declaration. O England, England, will this reproach never be rolled away from thee? Is there anything like this to be found either among Papists, Turks, or heathens? In the name of truth, justice, mercy, and common sense, I ask, 1. Why do men lie for lying's sake? Is it only to keep their hands in? What need else of saying it was the port of London when everyone knew the brandy was landed above 300 miles from thence? What a monstrous contempt of truth does this show, or rather hatred to it. 2. Where is the justice of swelling 400 pounds into 577? 3. Where is the common sense of taking up 14 sheets to tell a story that may be told in 10 lines? 4. Where is the mercy of thus grinding the face of the poor, thus sucking the blood of a poor beggared prisoner? Would not this be execrable villainy if the paper and writing together were only 6 pence a sheet, when they have stripped him already of his little all and not left him 14 groats in the world? Sunday the 5th. Believing one hindrance of the work of God in York was the neglect of field preaching, I preached this morning at 8 in an open place near the city walls. Abundance of people ran together, most of whom were deeply attentive. One or two only were angry and threw a few stones, but it was labor lost, for none regarded them. Sunday the 12th. I had appointed to be at Haworth, but the church would not nearly contain the people who came from all sides. However, Mr. Grimshaw had provided for this by fixing a scaffold on the outside of one of the windows, through which I went after prayers, and the people likewise all went out into the churchyard. The afternoon congregation was larger still. What has God wrought in the midst of those rough mountains? some impudent women. Monday the 13th, about 5, I preached at Paddyham, another place eminent for all manner of wickedness. The multitude of people obliged me to stand in the yard of a preaching house. Over against me at a little distance sat some of the most impudent women I ever saw, yet I am not sure that God did not reach their hearts, for they roared and would have blushed if capable of shame. Friday the 24th, about 1, I preached at Bramley, where Jonas Rushford, about 14 years old, gave me the following relation. About this time last year, I was desired by two of our neighbors to go with them to Mr. Crowther's at Skipton, who would not speak to them about a man that had been missing 20 days, but did them bring a boy 12 or 13 years old. When we came in, he stood reading a book. Seen in a looking glass. He put me into a bed with a looking glass in my hand and covered me all over. Then he asked me whom I had a mind to see, and I said, my mother. I presently saw her with a lock of wool in her hand, standing just in the place and the clothes she was in, as she told me afterwards. Then he bid me look again for the man that was missing, who was one of our neighbors. And I looked and saw him riding toward Idle, but he was very drunk. And he stopped at the alehouse and drank 2 pints more, and he pulled out a guinea to change. 2 men stood by, a big man and a little man, and they went on before him and got 2 hedge stakes. And when he came up on Windle Common at the top of the hill, they pulled him off his horse, killed him, and threw him into a coal pit. And I saw it all as plain as if I was close to them. And if I saw the men, I should know them again. We went back to Bradford that night, and the next day I went with our neighbors and showed them the spot where he was killed and the pit he was thrown into. And a man went down and brought him up. And it was as I had told them. His handkerchief was tied about his mouth and fastened behind his neck. Is it improbable only, or flatly impossible, when all the circumstances are considered, that this should all be pure fiction? They that can believe this may believe a man's getting into a bottle. Monday, July 27. I preached at Staincross about 11, about 5 at Barley Hill, and next morning at Sheffield. In the afternoon, I rode on to Matlock Bath. The valley which reaches from the town to the bath is pleasant beyond expression. In the bottom of this runs a little river, close to which a mountain rises, almost perpendicular, to an enormous height. Part is covered with green, part with ragged and naked rocks. On the other side, the mountain rises gradually with tufts of trees here and there. The brow on both sides is fringed with trees, which seem to answer each other. Wesley at Matlock Bath in Boston. Many of our friends were come from various parts. At 6, I preached standing under the hollow of a rock, on one side of a small plain, on the other side of which was a tall mountain. There were many well-dressed hearers, this being the high season, and all of them behaved well. But as I walked back, a gentleman-like man asked me, why do you thus talk of faith? Stuff, nonsense. Upon inquiry, I found he was an eminent deist. What, has the plague crept into the peak of Derbyshire? Thursday, August 13. I took a walk through Boston. I think it is not much smaller than Leeds, but in general it is far better built. The church is indeed a fine building. It is larger, loftier, nay, and rather more lightsome than even St. Peter's at Norwich, and the steeple is, I suppose, the highest tower in England, nor less remarkable for the architecture than the height. Saturday, November 14. I spent an hour with a little company near Grosvenor Square. For many years, this has been the darkest, driest spot of all in or near London. But God has now watered the barren wilderness, and it has become a fruitful field. Preaching at Deptford, Welling, and Seven Oaks, in my way, on Thursday, December 3rd, I came to Shoreham. There I read the celebrated Life of St. Catherine of Genoa. Mr. Leslie calls one a devil of a saint. I am sure this was a fool of a saint, that is, if it was not the folly of her historian, who has aggrandized her into a mere idiot. Indeed, we seldom find a saint of God's making sainted by the Bishop of Rome. Friday the 25th, London. We began as usual at 4. A few days since, one who lived in known sin, finding heavy conviction, broke away and ran out, she knew not whither. She met one who offered her a shilling a week to come and take care of her child. She went gladly. The woman's husband, hearing her stir between 3 and 4, began cursing and swearing bitterly. His wife said, "I wish thou wouldst go with her and see if anything will do thee good." He did so. In the first hymn, God broke his heart, and he was in tears all the rest of the service. How soon did God recompense this poor woman for taking the stranger in? Preaching by Moonlight, 1762, Monday, January 4th. After preaching to a large congregation at Wrestlingworth, we rode on to Harston. I never preached a whole sermon by moonlight before. However, it was a solemn season, a season of holy mourning to some, to others of joy unspeakable. Monday, March 29. I preached about 12 in the new room at Chepstow. One of the congregation was a neighboring clergyman who had lived in the same staircase with me at Christ Church and was then far more serious than I. Blessed be God who has looked upon me at last. Now let me redeem the time. In the afternoon, we had such a storm of hail as I scarcely ever saw in my life. The roads likewise were so extremely bad that we did not reach Hereford till past 8. Having been well battered both by hail, rain, and wind, I got to bed as soon as I could, but was wakened many times by the clattering of the curtains. In the morning I found the casement wide open, but I was never the worse. I took horse at 6 with William Crane and Francis Walker. The wind was piercing cold, and we had many showers of snow and rain. But the worst was, part of the road was scarcely passable, so that at Church Stretton, one of our horses lay down and would go no farther. However, William Crane and I pushed on, and before 7 reached Shrewsbury. A large company quickly gathered together. Many of them were wild enough, but the far greater part were calm and attentive and came again at 5 in the morning. Some rough journeys. Wednesday the 31st. Having been invited to preach at Wem, Mrs. Glynn desired she might take me thither in a post-chaise, but in little more than an hour we were fast enough. However, the horses pulled till the traces broke. I should then have walked had I been alone, though the mud was deep and the snow drove impetuously, but I could not leave my friend. So I waited patiently till the man had made shift to mend the traces, and the horses pulled amain, so that with much ado, not long after the time appointed, I came to Wem. I came, but the person who invited me was gone out of town at 4 in the morning. I could find no one who seemed either to expect or desire my company. I inquired after the place where Mr. Mather preached, but it was filled with hemp. It remained only to go into the market house, but neither any man, woman, or child cared to follow us, for the north wind roared so loud on every side and poured in from every quarter. However, before I had done singing, 2 or 3 crept in, and after them 2 or 300, and the power of God was so present among them that I believe many forgot the storm. The wind grew still higher in the afternoon, so that it was difficult to sit our horses, and it blew full in our face, but could not prevent our reaching Chester in the evening. Though the warning was short, the room was full, and full of serious, earnest hearers, many of whom expressed a longing desire of the whole salvation of God. Here I rested on Thursday. Friday, April 2nd, I rode to Parkgate and found several ships, but the wind was contrary.